KOJB 90.1 The Eagle. Good day. Welcome to another edition of Environmental Voices. I'm Marie Rock, and we're going to wrap up our archaeological four-part series. Matt has joined me once again in the studio. What are we going to talk about today, Matt?
Well, I thought it might be interesting to delve into the details, or some of the details anyway, of a specific site. We've been talking kind of in general terms, so I was hoping we could maybe focus on one site and how the information that we derive from that helps us develop a better understanding of past lifeways. And the site I'd like to discuss is one that's known as the Stevens Lake site. And the site was initially documented in, I believe, 1983 with a phase one. If you remember, our phase one was just, is there a site here?
Right.
And over time, it was determined that it might be of value to do a phase two, an evaluation on that site to see what type it is. So a couple of years ago, we had to first go back and relocate this site, because the initial work had been done, you know, 30 years ago, and we had to go back in and basically do another phase one to relocate it. And then after we did that, based on our clues, as it were, from the phase one, we decided, or it was decided that we would place, I believe we put in 5 excavation units that year. And when we talk about using the clues from the phase one, if we have a shovel test that has high densities of artifacts in it, and then a couple more shovel tests that have low densities, well, that gives us a clue that we might want to put our formal unit near these high densities of artifacts. You know, we're looking at an activity area, and so that might result in better data for us to work with, you know, a higher volume and a more complete picture of the past life situation. And in the course of doing the phase two, the initial phase two, we encountered evidence that suggested that it was a late paleo to early archaic transition time frame. Okay. Of course, when we've discussed these woodland archaic and paleo time periods, which are admittedly kind of arbitrary and based on technology, one shouldn't think that there was, like, as of January 1, year X, everybody just decided to change their technology and jump to something else. So you have transition periods from one to the other. And the artifacts recovered during the initial phase two, we had a lancelet, a siltstone lancelet biface, and a couple other tools, including a trihedral adze, that really suggested that it might fall into that period, but we didn't have any other way of dating it. And one of the there's two unique aspects about the particular landform that we were working on. One is that it's on a high terrace that is a former shoreline, but it is now about a mile and a quarter to a mile and a half from the current flowage of the Mississippi. Well, that suggests that it was probably inhabited quite some time ago, because people tend to establish their habitations in close proximity to water.
Right.
And certainly in this case, it was not only is it a mile and a quarter, a mile and a half away, but it's a mile and a half of swamp, which means, you know, going to get the water was not a good idea.
No.
So we're looking at an earlier period. And also, this particular landform consisted of very fine silty sands that are associated with windblown deposition. It's called aeolian deposition, where the very soils were the result of winds picking up small sand particles and transporting them. It's part of what's known as the Bena Dune Fields, actually southeast of Lake Winnebogoshish. We have dune fields.
Wow.
Sand dunes, serious sand
dunes.
And they're all hidden under vegetation now. But there are major sand dunes there. And this particular site area was a segment of that. And so it was decided after the initial phase two that we would go back in and do a continued additional phase two work to try and better define the time frame. And one of the things that we instituted, and this was last year that this work was conducted, we instituted OSL dating. OSL is short for optically stimulated luminescence. And it really boils down to high-tech physics. Modern archaeological research is very multidisciplinary, and we use every branch of science you can imagine. And what OSL dating does is that it dates the last time that quartz and feldspar sand grains were exposed to sunlight. And so what that allowed us to do, because we didn't have any good radiocarbon C14 samples, was it allowed us to date the soils levels at the levels that the artifacts were coming out from and actually date the last time those soils were exposed to sunlight.
Wow.
And in this particular case, it proved to be very insightful because the paleoarchaic transition in northern and northeastern Minnesota is generally considered to have occurred between about 6,000 and 8,000 years ago. Our OSL dates for the Stevens Lake site at the level that we had these bifaces coming out came out 7,600 years ago.
Wow.
So it essentially confirmed our initial suspicions as far as this being a late paleo, early archaic. We also had OSL samples from levels below that. We took them at 25, 50, and 75 centimeter depths. And as kind of an interesting aside, I mentioned the Aeolian windblown genesis of that landform. Well, for off and on for some 40 years, there's been a debate as to when that landform was actually formed. Mm-hmm. And there's been one camp that maintained that it was formed right after the glacial wasting when you had a barren landscape and the winds were moving these sands in and depositing them. There is another school that has argued that it was deposited during the altothermal, that dry, warm period that we discussed where you had open prairie-like outfit environment, and the winds were depositing those soils. Interestingly enough, our OSL dating strongly supported that the upper layers, including the layer associated with this late paleoarchaic transition and the artifacts associated with that, it indicates that that time period fits with the altothermal. That's when those soils were deposited. But the lower levels, the 50 and 75 centimeter levels coincided with the post-glacial period. So what it basically means is that both camps of this debate were correct.
Right.
It was the landform itself was the result of both a post-glacial and an altothermal set of events, which is kind of an amusing aside. It gives you an idea of how far archaeological research can extend as far as the data that we can provide, in that now we have soil scientists that are interested in this. It also relates to other people that might be doing archaeological work on the same landform, because now we have a bracket of dates that people can utilize when they don't have a date themselves from the site, mm-hmm. to use as a proxy date to relate to whatever project they might be working on. And so it's kind of an interesting aside where at least indications to this point suggest that that OSL dating might have resolved a debate that's been going on for decades.
Wow. Cool. So when you're saying the archaeological findings that you found, what exactly did you find?
At the Stevens Lake site?
Yeah.
It was all lithics. That was another clue, that it was a pre-woodland site. Generally, in a woodland site, you tend to find ceramics.
Okay.
They were heavily utilized. This was all lithics, and we had what's called debitage, which is the flakes. When you're making a stone tool, you're reducing it down, you're knocking little pieces off to form your final tool.
Okay.
And so we found debitage, and then we found a few formal tools. We found that lancelet siltstone biface. We found the tip of a very high-grade siltstone biface that had flaking patterns that were consistent with the paleo-early archaic technology. Again, these technologies change, and there's subtle differences in the way flakes were detached,
okay.
that can be analyzed and suggest certain time periods. And then the trihedral adze, that was another interesting one. An adze is basically a tool that people have associated with the construction of watercraft, such as hollowing out a log to make a dugout canoe.
Wow.
And this trihedral adze is, again, associated with that late paleo, early archaic period, and possibly the utilization of some early watercraft.
Excellent. So let's say I'm on my property, wherever, if I happen to have some, and I come across something, I don't know, be it a... what would they call those arrowheads back in the day or whatever? Just something that might be different.
Right.
What do I do?
Feel free to contact our office.
Okay.
Contact the Leech Lake Heritage Sites Program, and we might not be able to get to it right away because we're generally very busy, but we certainly would like to know about it because that would help us document. You know, we could come out, check it, because if you do have a site there and it is intact, we would like to see it protected.
Excellent.
Of course, and if it's on allotment or leased land or something like that, it needs to be protected under the Leech Lake Cultural Resources Protection Ordinance.
Okay.
And so feel free to contact us. And again, we might not get it through immediately, but we'll be able to come out there and possibly do a little shovel testing, examine the area, and then we can document it and hopefully preserve it for the future.
Excellent. Matt, you've been so informative. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about this.
Thank you, Marie.
All right. That's going to wrap up this edition of Environmental Voices for KOJB 90.1 The Eagle. I'm Marie Rock.